Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. The next series of shows I'd like to embark upon is All Your Worth, The Ultimate Lifetime Money Plan, which I have spent time on years ago, but which I feel is something we need to revisit in light of the challenges in our economy. The book, All Your Worth, is by Elizabeth Warren, who most of you know about now. She is a senator from Massachusetts, the first female senator from that state. And she has been a very important person in dealing with many debt issues, credit card issues, and issues to help the middle class in particular at the governmental level in the last few years. But before that, as a writer and scholar, a professor at Harvard University. She has a number of books, and All Your Worth was written with her daughter, Amelia Warren Tiagi. What I will follow for the most part is her book, All Your Worth, as the textbook in this series. What we started last week was financial CPR, protecting yourself when things get tough. You've worked really hard on a lifetime plan if you've been following this show and reading All Your Worth, so you should be on track. You've been bringing your money into balance. You've been creating a plan to make your money last a lifetime and building a security fund and moving toward a future that will be richer and more secure. But you know, and we all know, sometimes things do not go according to the plan. Sometimes, even when you are doing your best to put everything together, the pieces just don't work. Maybe you get laid off and it takes months to find another job. Or maybe you get divorced and your ex leaves you with basically nothing but the bills. Or if you're in a business, your business partner takes off to get in touch with himself. Or maybe the refrigerator falls on your foot. These are all real possibilities amidst an infinite number of unplanned events. There are times when bad things happen to good people, times when it seems like you just can't catch a break. Professor Warren says that that's where most plans end, and you're supposed to ride into the sunset. But her theory is to know some financial CPR. Just like real CPR, we hope you'll never have to use your financial CPR training. But we want you to have the knowledge just in case. We want you to know, somewhere in the back of your mind, that if things ever go really wrong, you are ready to handle whatever life throws your way. In other words, you'll have a real plan, a plan for good times and bad, which is effectively a plan for life. So this is an emergency backup plan. Any CPR instructor worth her salt will tell you that most important is the step to prepare for an emergency before one arises. You have to know how to recognize the danger signs, learn the steps, and run through some practice drills. There may not be time to get out the instruction manual when a person is turning blue, so it's a good idea to give it some thought now when everyone is breathing just fine. This is the same lesson that holds for financial protection. Financial CPR is about creating a strategy for what you will do if things go wrong. It boils down to one question. What will you do in a financial emergency? There are essentially four steps that Professor Warren puts forth for your own emergency backup plan. They are: 1, spot the dangers; 2, make a list of wants you could cut; 3, make a list of must-haves you can cut; and 4, practice every year and before any major purchase. Starting with spot the dangers, you already know what we're talking about, those scary places where you might be vulnerable. You know they're there, but it's more comfortable to look away. Maybe you worry about your health, or maybe you worry about your job. What we want is for you to do something that may feel a little unnatural and a little frightening. We want you to look those worries square in the face. We want you to focus on what you can do to make things better and to worry a little less. So, for example, suppose you worry about your job disappearing. That may just be a fact of life, but there are things you can do now to prepare yourself. Do a little online job hunting and dust off your resume and send it out to a few places just in case. Or perhaps you are concerned about your parents' health. Now is a good time to talk with them about their wishes and maybe help them get long-term care insurance. The thing is to spot the vulnerabilities and think about them now when you have plenty of time to take steps to protect yourself. If you see some real dangers lurking in your future, there is something else you can do now. Don't make it worse. Maybe you can't find a better job right away, but you can also know that this isn't a good time to take on a brand new car loan. If your folks are getting along in ages, this might not be the time for you to move. We all hope that things will stay perfect, but life isn't always so smooth. So find the time to review the possibilities so you can protect yourself just in case. Jot your ideas down on a sheet of paper, include the possible vulnerabilities and your ideas for what you might do. Writing it down will make it real. The next thing you do, 2, is make a list of wants you could cut. Ask yourself, if something went wrong, which wants would I cut first? The point here is not to get rid of the wants spending right this minute. Just the opposite. As long as you're working and everyone is healthy, you should keep enjoying your wants to the fullest. Just be prepared, though, so that if the need ever arises, you'll be ready to move fast. This is where all the hard work you put into getting your money in balance pays off. You've broken the credit card habit, and you've gotten really, really clear on what you need and what you can live without. So take a minute to think it through. What would you cut first? What would you cut second? For example, you might decide that at the first sign of trouble, you start cooking every night and skip the trips to restaurants. Or maybe you get rid of cable TV or even the cell phone. Ultimately, if things ever got really tough, you would probably cut all of your wants. But for now, think of the cuts that hurt the least, so you're ready to trim if the need ever arises. This is also a good time to make sure that you can make these cuts. If you think you could live without your cell phone, for example, then make sure that you aren't trapped into a 2-year contract. Likewise, find out if there is a penalty for canceling your satellite dish. With a little preparation now, you'll be able to respond lightning quick if the need ever arises. And I'll come back to 3 after station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now, point 3 in financial CPR is make a list of must-haves you could cut. This is a more serious step, but it could be crucial. You look for places where you could trim your must-haves if you ever need to. You're probably thinking, is this crazy? There's no one who can do this. There's nothing left to cut. Well, the point here is that we're not asking you to make more cuts. We're just asking you to think about cuts you could make if you absolutely had to. This really is the moment for some creative thinking. If things got tough and you couldn't manage your must-haves, what steps might you take? Could you move in with your parents? Maybe just until you get back on your feet. Could you sell the car and take the bus for a while? Could you pull the kids out of preschool or after-school activities? Could you rent out the house and move into an apartment? There's a very specific reason for these questions. Sometimes decisions you make now can preserve options for the future. Jesse Noland is living proof. 4 years after buying her own little bungalow, she decided to remodel. Her builder tried to talk her into getting rid of the second bedroom so she could make a single larger master bedroom suite with double walk-in closets and a spa bath. He sketched out pictures and urged her to go for it. But Jessie hesitated, deciding to keep the smaller two bedrooms and add a second small bathroom instead. 7 months after the renovations were complete, and long before they were paid off, Jessie took a hard fall at work. Even with workman's compensation, she was out of money in about 5 months, and she was looking at five more months of rehab before she could return to her job as a cardiac nurse. So Jessie invited her mom to move in. It was a godsend. Mom drove me around, did the shopping, and she helped out with the mortgage, the utilities, the kind of thing that I needed. If I had remodeled my house to fit only one person, this never would have worked. So think now about preserving your options if things go wrong. You may end up keeping some flexibility that could be important later on. In short, make a list of possible cuts you could make if you ever need to. And then point four is practice every year and before any major purchase. It is good to practice a CPR drill every year or so. Do the same with your money. Once a year, set aside an hour to think about what you would do if your finances took a tumble. Pick a special day, the day before your birthday or January 1st, or Halloween, the scariest day of the year, and then do a little planning. Update your list of places where you might be vulnerable, and make sure you've done your best to address them. You should also update your list of emergency targets so you're ready to cut your spending if you ever need to. Once your CPR drill is over, file away the papers and put the worries out of your mind, secure in the knowledge that you have planned ahead and done your best. Then give yourself a treat. You deserve it. And remember, this isn't about walking around with a black cloud over your head. This is about taking sensible, positive action when you have time to plan it out. Think of yourself as an optimist with a parachute. Well, that leads us to the next area, what to do when bad things do happen. This is when there are no times for drills. This is a real emergency. You've run through your security fund and money is getting tight. What should you do? No one can promise that things won't get tough, but there are some tools to help you stay calm and to keep you in charge of your own future. The first thing is stay in control. Don't panic. This is very important. Professor Warren once saw a man slumped to the floor in an airport, his face rapidly turning purple and his eyes fluttering closed. The woman closest to him shrieked loudly, "Help this man," then bolted for the women's room. A few minutes later, she came back looking wild-eyed and carrying a single paper towel. Fortunately, other folks in the airport hadn't panicked and CPR was well underway by the time she came back. Panic can happen any time. A pink slip may leave you pacing the floor all night. A collection notice may leave you speechless. That is when you need to repeat to yourself, "No matter how bad things get, I always have options. But to weigh your options carefully, you will need a clear head. Keep your wits about you and don't panic. And of course, repeat, no matter what happens, I always have options. It is important to understand that when you are in financial trouble, you are still in control. Yes, creditors have rights, but you have rights too. More important, you are the one who earns the money, and you have control over the bank accounts, the house, and everything else in your name. This means that you are the one who decides which creditors get paid, and you are the one who decides whether to sell something to give it back or to work out a payment plan. Those are your decisions, and you are still in the driver's seat. So keep calm. You may be forced to make some tough choices, but these are still your choices. If you keep your head, you'll get through this. The next point is react quickly. The corollary to don't panic is move fast. When something goes wrong, you need to create a plan and you need to do it quickly, which is why you practiced the financial CPR drill. Just like when someone starts choking, the time it takes to respond can make a huge difference. It may seem obvious that you need a quick response, but in fact, many people delay. The greatest danger when you get into financial trouble is not bill collectors, although they can be the most annoying. The greatest danger is misplaced optimism. Some people think, I'm sure I can find another job right away. Surely, I will be feeling better soon. Or my wife and I will patch things up after a little time apart. Many job counselors tell people who have lost their job to keep up their lives just as before. Hit the credit cards and keep everything normal. Bad advice. Things aren't normal. The speed with which you react may make the difference between a fender bender and a head-on collision. So the point is, when you get in financial trouble, respond quickly. If a crisis comes your way, the first thing will be to trim the spending. Go back to your CPR drill and look at the list of cuts you decided you could make if you had to. And then you start cutting fast. When rumors of pink slips start flying around the office, that's the time to eat dinner at home and cancel the cell phone. What's the point of cutting your spending? If you've lost your job, the answer's pretty obvious. Make sure you have enough to pay your must-haves. But if the bad news is still just a rumor, that's the time to fatten up your security fund a little more. It's also a good time to stop investing in your retirement fund or putting extra payments into the mortgage. You can resume just as soon as the crisis passes. You already know this instinctively. After all, you wouldn't open an IRA or go on a shopping spree the day after you lost your job. But if you take the time to think about this now, you'll be ready to react more quickly if the need ever arises. And I'll return to this after station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I am speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So to be ready to react quickly, give yourself a timeline. Since you don't really know when the crisis will end, you should create a schedule for yourself. For example, you might decide that if you haven't found a job within 3 months, it will be time to move to a smaller apartment and take a job waiting tables on the weekends while you continue to job search during the week. The point here is to be proactive so that you stay in charge of your life. The next thing is to call the creditors. If you are in trouble and you know you'll miss a payment, get on the phone. Professor Warren talks about a friend of hers named Ramon. When he was a wet-behind-the-ears accountant who had just hung out his shingle, one of his clients, a small trucking business, ran short on cash. The owner said to call the people we owe money to and tell them we'd be late in paying. Ramon was appalled, but he needed this guy's business, so he picked up the phone and started calling. My hands were sweaty, my heart was pounding, and I thought they'd start cursing me out. But the first company I called said they appreciated the notice. They worked out a quick plan with me and actually thanked me for calling. By the third call, I was breathing normally, and I realized I was actually helping get this business back on track. Over the years, Ramon found he had a knack for helping struggling companies. He opened his own turnaround business, and today he runs a multi-million-dollar company that employs more than 100 people. And it all started with a phone call. What is good enough for Ramon and his business clients is good enough for you. So get on the phone. Sure, it may be embarrassing, but your creditors will be much more willing to work something out if you call them before they have to call you. Explain what has happened. You've lost your job, or you've been attacked by a wild dog, whatever it is, and tell them you want to make good. Some creditors, such as student loan insurers and utility companies, have special provisions to accommodate people who are facing a serious illness or job loss, so be sure to ask. You are much less likely to get hammered with late fees and collection notices if you make the first call. Ask your creditors if they will work out a repayment plan for you, perhaps just a token payment for a few months until you get back on your feet. But also be sure to keep a record of whatever you agree on. You may need this later on. But remember this hard and fast rule. Don't agree to anything unless you are absolutely certain that you can meet your end of the bargain. If you are out of work and you don't yet have a regular job, just tell them what is wrong and that you'll try to work out a plan as soon as you can. Don't commit to anything yet. Be completely honest and never make promises you can't keep. The next point is pay the bills that matter most. If things get really tight and you don't have enough to cover all your expenses, then pay the most important bills first. For most people, the home comes first, and then maybe the car or the health insurance policy. Figure out your priorities. Sure, you don't want to pay everything, but this is a little like deciding what to save in a fire. Save the most important things first, then save what you can. Don't try to save everything at once because it is just too much to handle. So decide which things you treasure most and pay those bills first. Here's an example. After her divorce, Antoinette was determined to keep everything the same for her two daughters, the house, the SUV, the ballet lessons. She felt that her girls were bruised enough when their daddy left, and they shouldn't have to pay any more. Before long, she found herself choosing which bills to pay and which to put off another month. It was a call from a collection agent that fully shook Antoinette out of her fog. The bill collector was really aggressive, calling her a cheat and a stupid cow. She slammed down the phone, her hand trembling and her heart racing. I thought, is this where I'm headed? People think they can treat me like this? And that was the moment she decided it was time for a change. She put all her expenses on paper and realized there just wasn't enough to keep going the way she was going. Her first priority was to own a home. So she sold the big house, which she had shared with her husband, and bought a smaller place. Then she let the rest go. She sold the Ford Explorer and switched the girls to a tumbling class at the local YMCA. Antoinette said, "It took me 7 months to find a decent full-time job, and then my knee went out, and I had to get surgery, and that costs a lot. But we've done all right. I look at our little house. The girls and I have painted and stenciled every room. We even painted frogs in the utility room. I think about how I could have waited to move and ended up in some cheap apartment in a bad section of town. I saved what I could, and I'm proud the girls and I are making it okay. So that's Antoinette. If you have one or two particularly noisy creditors, it may be tempting to send them some money just to get them to leave you alone. This is a mistake. You need to work out the payment plan that makes sense for you. It doesn't matter who makes what demands or what the bill collectors threaten. If serious trouble comes your way, you should be fighting for the things you care about, not trying to quiet down the most aggressive bill collector. Now, the last point for today is borrow only as a last resort and keep it safe. You have cut out the fund spending, you have drained your security fund, and there still isn't enough. What then? If you don't have enough money to keep bread on the table, to get medical care, and keep the lights on, then go ahead and borrow the money. Go into debt, but do it carefully. The first rule is to make absolutely certain that there is no other way. Could you earn a little extra cash instead? Is there still a little something in the piggy bank? If you haven't exhausted every possible reserve, then don't borrow yet. This borrowing will cost you big time in the future, so break the glass and pull the alarm only when you are sure that there is no other option. The second rule is that borrowing is for must-haves only. You already know this. You wouldn't take out a loan to take a trip to Vegas, but this is just to make it doubly clear. Once you start down the slippery slope of debt, it can be so easy to just put any old thing on the credit card. After all, it is Christmas and I don't want to disappoint the kids. And the lawnmower is on its last legs. And that is such a good deal. No, these are not must-have expenses. So knit your own Christmas presents and borrow the neighbor's lawnmower. You can take on debt for housing, medical care, and food. And that's it. The next point is safety is more important than interest rates. A home equity loan or a car title loan may seem attractive since the interest rate is lower and the advertisements are coming thick and fast. But the last thing you should do when you get in trouble is put your treasures on the line. After all, it will be tough enough to keep up with your mortgage and your car loan, so you shouldn't make a payment even bigger when you are staring trouble right in the teeth. Safety is more important than interest rates. If you need to take on debt, use a credit card instead of a home equity loan, for example. What should you do then? Well, you start by stringing out your payments. Request a deferment on your student loans and hold off on paying the cell phone, the dentist, the doctor, and other outstanding bills for anything besides your utilities, home, and car payment. You may get some dings on your credit report and your cell phone may get shut off, but these creditors probably won't charge you exorbitant interest, especially if you call ahead of time. And they won't kick you out on the street. The next thing to do is take the lowest interest credit card you can find and charge the necessities. Yes, credit cards are dangerous, and yes, we've told you to cut up your cards. But we also said that cards are for emergencies, and this is an emergency. Put the groceries on the credit card and make the minimum payments as best you can. The bad news is that you may pay more for this kind of debt than you would for a house equity loan, but the good news is that you won't risk losing the place where you live. If push comes to shove, you can discharge your credit card, medical debt, and so forth by filing bankruptcy. And we'll continue this in the next program. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous Debt Manageable Life.